Welcome to the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Kara, the podcast for Central Floridians who want to be in the know on what's happening in Orange, Lake, Osceola, and Seminole counties. Sponsored by the Central Florida Home Brewers, the premier craft and homebrew club. Learn to brew beer, kombucha, mead, or make wine. Visit www.cfhb.org. Now, here's your host, Mike Kara.
Mike Kara here. Well, welcome back to our next edition of the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Kara here at Dead Lizard Brewing as the Central Florida Home Brewers is having their general membership meeting with me today. From the Central Florida Home Brewers is Matt Hunsworth. And Matt, it's a pleasure and honor you could join me today. And well, it is December, almost the end of the year, and the holidays are coming up. And I mean, beer-wise, is it a big time for you? I mean, is this a time to start, you know, getting beers all made up or think about new beers? Or
Double duty going on right now. I do some beers for the holidays, and like literally right now, this weekend, we're in the first weekend of December, so it's now or never. And then you start putting, if you're a competitor and you want to enter when the circuit starts up in the first of the year, basically, you kind of have your eyes set on that. So I'm doing it for both. One for the beers that I want for the holidays. We have a particular Christmas one we do every year that's ready just in time for Christmas when we start it right about now. And then I'm not brewing yet, but I am thinking about what's the first thing I'm going to brew for the competition season coming up very, very quickly here. So yeah, let's be honest, I'm brewing on my mind all the time, but those are the two subjects right now that I'm concentrating on for brewing.
So we understand, Matt, that both you and your wife brew beer, but I mean, do you like to brew together, or are there times where you just have your own separate brews?
Yeah, well, both. We'll brew together. We brewed our Christmas ale together yesterday. And the flip side of the coin, we'll brew separately as well. All depends on what, I wouldn't even say a reason to brew. It's like, I think both of us get that itch at different times, and we'll brew. It's so easy now with the systems that we have to brew with, and then sometimes we plan ahead to brew together. So we're there's always something going on at the house between the two of us.
So Matt, during this time, do people always say, you know, hey, if you're going to get me a gift, you know, get me beer? I mean, does that ever happen? They know that you brew beer, that they'd like some, or
it used to, but I guess it's been so many years that I've done it. They know it's going to happen, so they don't necessarily ask anymore. They used to ask for like specific beers at whatever time. Like, I would like a brown ale for Christmas, or maybe some kind of stout because it might get cold. But I've gone ahead and made what I thought was a better, or brought what I thought was a better choice, whatever event we're doing, and they kind of leave it in my hands at this point. So they don't directly ask for it, but I think it's expected at this point.
So I'm here for you. Matt, you know, we talk about competitions. I know, you know, congratulations, you've won a lot of awards. But I mean, for you, is it, you know, just a combination of, you know, making a good beer, having the satisfaction of making a good beer and somebody appreciating it rather than just go give me the award? Or
yeah, that's a tough question because it's a lot of different things. There is a lot of what you said. I would say that's more than half of what I do. I want to make a good beer and I want it to be recognized as a good beer. That's half of it. Then the other half is for what are you competing for? And that's probably, there's various different questions for a lot of people. Like last year, my brewing was mostly focused on getting the best beers that the local judges like, get to know what beers they like so I can reproduce them for the Sunshine Challenge so we could keep the cup this year. That was my focus. Even though I was brewing beers that I don't necessarily like to drink, but I know how to make the style, and I know the judges that are going to judge them in our region like them. So that focus was a little different than any other year. So that was a little, that was probably most of the other half of what I was brewing. Then there's that little bit in there where I just like get some kind of half this urge where I'm like, I'm tired of brewing a classic style. I'm tired of brewing for the club. I want to make this beer with whatever, you know, X, this. I have a batch of dried peppers. I want to make the hottest beer I can possibly make. So those are the three things I went through this past year as far as my motivation for brewing. This year, I'm already on a completely different path. I just want to do whatever strikes my interest at the moment that it hits my mind. And I did that exact thing last night, even though we're not quite in 2023 yet. I had two bags of candy corn that we were never going to eat. And I didn't want them to necessarily go to waste, although I don't know that candy corn can age out. So I looked at the ingredients and saw honey, sucrose, and dextrose, and I was like, well, okay, if I melt those down and put them in with this honey that I have that tastes like marshmallows, I might be able to make a marshmallow mead. So instead of thinking about it and deciding where I'm going to do with that mead when I'm done with it, I just went ahead and did it. And that's what I'm going to do this next year. I want to not worry about competition. I don't worry about my points. I don't want to worry about any particular club's points. I just want to have fun seeing what I can do with fermentation, period.
So that, you know, that's great, Matt. But that being said, you know, you as a judge do have an advantage, because for our audience, that both the, you know, the judges, and I'm sure that the competitors can get this book that says all the things that you're looking for. So when you're making a beer, you could almost judge your own beer. Does that give you a leg up, you think? Or?
It probably does. And anyone has that advantage. It's not a book you need to buy. It's a downloadable PDF from the BJCP. So I'm sure it does. And the more you judge beers, like, and when I say judge beers, I don't mean in a structured setting. You can judge a beer at your lounge chair on your iPad. Like, so the more you actually pay attention to the nuances of what a beer tastes like compared to how they're out in the guideline, anyone can learn that. I guess I have the advantage that I had to learn it the past two tests to get to the point where I'm at. So maybe there's a little bit of an advantage there. But yeah, anyone can do that. That's something I think anyone has the ability to do. But to, you know, agree with what you said, yes, I think having to make sure I knew what those things meant to pass those exams, yes, I'm sure that gives me some kind of advantage, at least for the final product, in my opinion, of what I think it tastes like.
So, Matt, we understand, we've mentioned before in shows that you made a Malamar beer and that you work with different ingredients. But, I mean, do you think that they're, like, let's take, for example, like an eggnog beer. Do you think that there's limitations to ingredients you could use?
Okay, yes and no. Like, I would not use direct eggnog in a beer, because putting that much viscous dairy and fat into a beer is just going to congeal and fall to the bottom. Would I try to make a beer that mimics or matches the taste of eggnog? That I would do. So I might call it an eggnog-inspired beer, but I would never put eggnog in it. So yes, I'd say there's a limitation of what you can actually put in to a beer, like as far as physical ingredients, but I would say there's no limitation on imagination and making a beer taste like something else. I think you can probably just be inspired by just about anything.
So do you think like something like fruit, you know, pretty much any fruit could be put in there?
Yeah. In fact, the competition we talked about this evening during the meeting is a perfect example of that. Iron Brewer, they have a master sheet of over 120 ingredients. I forget the exact number, and I've seen everything. I've seen lettuce, I've seen cranberries, we had Malamars this past competition, I've seen Altoids. I mean, they just think of 120 different things and then randomly pick it. So yeah, I think the possibilities are absolutely are endless. It's just a matter of how you're going to make that translate into a beer. Again, I probably wouldn't put Altoids in a beer, but it's like, did I get some spearmint Altoids? Okay, maybe I get some dried spearmint and dry flavor my a very, very tasteless lager and make it taste like you're drinking a melted Altoid.
And one thing I want to tell, as you know, Matt, our audience is sometimes that the yeast can actually bring flavors. Yep. Like sometimes, oh, this is a good citrus beer. Well, there's no citrus in
right,
it.
Yeah.
That happens.
Oh, yeah. That's getting more prominent now more than ever. There's, I think all the yeast production companies are doing this now, but Omega seems to be leading the charge, where they'll make a very specialized strain of yeast. In fact, three examples I can give off the top of my head. They have a thylloid strain line that brings out all the citrus flavors. They have it for lagers. They have a couple for ales. They have one that brings out a really strong berry flavor, and they have one that brings out a very strong banana flavor. So, yeah, you could probably make a beer with, like, just a good amount of two row to get it up to 5 or 6%, just enough hops to give it a little bit of the beer character and the acidity it needs to be preserved. I can't think of the word I'm looking for. And then let the yeast bring in the flavor with citrus, banana, or berries with just those yeast alone. Yeah, absolutely. And that is going to probably increase more this next year than it already has, because it started about 2-3 years ago. It got a little bigger in 2022. Now I think all these yeast producers are going to really hone in on stylizing those yeasts and customizing them. I can't think of the biotechnical word for it, and we'll probably have some things we can't even imagine right now on the market in a year or so.
And speaking about yeast, Matt, so I was at Sanford Brewing, and I saw this accelerated yeast or whatever. Is that for people that want beer in a hurry? You know, usually minimum's about a month from, start to finish. Yeah. But, I mean, is there ways to cut down on production time? Or?
Yeah. The Norwegian yeast, which was big. It's still big now, but I think its big appearance was in 2021. That's a very fast yeast, and you can do it at room temperature. You can have a drinkable beer in a week. And the yeast manufacturers out in those strains, you have some very citrus-forward ones, you have some very clean ones. The Lutra yeast is advertised as a lager-style yeast. I've had varying degrees of success with that, but I have used it for other things. But yeah, that's another strain. Yeah, these producers are going to be, that's going to be, I think, in a few, in not very long, that's going to be the thing that's going to be focused on more. It used to be, it was hops during the big IPA, New England IPA phase, where people really concentrated on hops. I think yeast could be the next best thing. I don't know, but I think that could be the next big thing, I should say, not best thing. That'll be the next big thing, in my opinion.
Oh, so that was Norwegian yeast then?
Yeah, Kveik or Kveik. There's another pronunciation which escapes me. It's been pronounced 1,000 different ways. I'm not Norwegian, so I'm not quite sure how to say it.
Okay.
Quick, I think, is how other people have said it.
Okay, so our audience is now rushing to find some of that. Matt, want to wish you, a very happy holiday. So, if you don't mind, for you, do you like to have a big Christmas party or a celebration with beer? Or?
No bigger than any other time. We always break open bottles of stuff that we've had around that's special at holidays. I mean, usually towards the end of the year, Halloween night, Thanksgiving and Christmas, New Year's Eve, but no more than any of those nights. We just really enjoy sharing good and special beers with people during the holidays.
Okay, Matt, any final thoughts or anything else you'd like to mention here?
No, I'm good. I just want to thank you. Once again, I forgot to thank you for having me on at the beginning of the show, so I'll thank you at the end of my segment for having me on.
Okay, yeah, definitely my pleasure. Okay, my guest has been Matt Hunsworth from the Central Florida Home Brewers, as today they're having their general membership meeting at Dead Lizard Brewing, and you're listening to the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Cara, and please stay with us for our next segment of this edition of our program today. Well, welcome back to our next segment of this edition of the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Cara, as we are here as the Central Florida homebrewers are having their general membership meeting at Dead Lizard Brewing. With me today is a member of the Central Florida Homebrewers, Mr. John Sather, who is one of our regular correspondents and offers so much wisdom and so much experience on beer. And John, you just made a banana mead, and I want to say that it was excellent. I mean, I think the banana flavor wasn't overwhelming, but I think you, with a mead, you don't necessarily want the whole thing to be banana, but I like the fact that you could taste the banana. I always like your beers your meads, because it doesn't burn you. You said that's because of the aging process, but tell us a little bit about this banana mead.
Well, all right, I will. I'm going to have to get my paper, though, because I don't have a lot of information.
Yeah, that's all right, sure. And John is just going to grab that so he can get all the right information for us. And there we go. Yeah.
My wife was hiding it over there. She got some special number on the bottom, I guess. But I've been trying to, print out what I do from my old notes that I, have kept all my life. I got an old three-ring binder with 200 pages of all my recipes, beers, and meads and whatever else I tried to do. But this one here is, I named it Double Bubble because at the time it was a little Pelagian or had a little bubble. But it sat over the years. Now it's it was made on February 19th of 2014 and bottled on end of April. So, it takes, for me, around 3 months to get a mead that's drinkable. And then the way I rotate my stuff, I sometimes forget about where I put it or what I got with it, and I find them later because I move cases and containers, milk jug containers of weirdo size bottles around. And this is one that I think John Cheek wanted me to try to make a banana mead at the time. Banana is kind of a flaw in mead. And I said, sure, I'll try it. When it's young and fresh, you can pick up the banana because I use like a Hefeweizen second generation starter yeast in this one. Also, I think I got some White Labs UPL 300 in there too. So, I tried with banana peels, I tried with the banana pulp, and the only way I can get a banana flavor is by using this kind of yeast. The banana, all that does, the pulp and the peels just build the body, and it doesn't really give it any banana flavor. So it's something that you kind of got to experiment with. I think this is the third time I tried it. But, I used, 12 pounds of orange blossom honey in the primary, and then I used 1 pound of wildflower, Webb's, both honeys, in the secondary to try to sweeten it up a little bit. And I like it. I mean, for 8.5-year-old mead, it's very, very, it's held up well as far as traditional, BJCP styles go. It just lost the flavor, so that's why I got to be careful sometimes when I enter these things, because I got to try them. Even though it says it's a banana mead, you'd be hard pressed to pull banana out of it, as far as flavor and aroma. So that would ding it, and it wouldn't score very well. So I would probably just not enter it that way. I'd just say heck with it. I'll throw it in a semi-sweet or sweet traditional and let them figure it out, because sometimes that's what they got to do. But that's really all I have here. I oxygenated it. We're having a pretty good club party here, aren't we? a lot of good tasty homebrews getting passed around and meads, except for Frank's. Boy, that thing is a peppery hot pepper mead that he's got, isn't it? Frank Ferber, but did you try it yet?
No, not yet.
We got to get you some of that.
Yeah, after this one.
Yeah, it's like a a pack of pepper sitting on the back of your throat once you get a taste of it. Table pepper, black pepper. But I'm still making meads. I got one sitting there now. I'm not sure. I put a little, you know, this and a little of that in there, extracts, you know, vanilla, almond extract, you know, eighth teaspoon maybe in a 5 gallon batch. Depending on what I want to do with them is how I treat them. And I'm always trying to stay away from all these flavorful, big, you know, orange or grape or God knows mango, you know, something or other meads that are all flavored. You know, I want to keep toward the natural part of a mead where it's just the honey that we're working with, or maybe just a small bit of extracts here or there instead of, you know, hiding what I think is the natural boutique and flavors of these honeys with these, flavors that they throw in there, you know. So I'm always trying to push for some sort of a traditional mead or something like that with maybe a small spice or maybe an herb or maybe a flower, you know, but not much. You know, I'm always pushing toward the traditional side of mead making anyway.
And to be honest with you, John, what you all just said, for me at least, is exactly what I tasted in that, banana mead. You could taste the honey, you could taste the flavor, you know, the banana's there. So, I mean, exactly what you're talking about is exactly what I'm getting. So,
yeah, well, I gave some to Danny Cato and he said, hey, this is competition mead. You know, what are you pouring it here for? I said, hey, I poured a lot of good mead here this year. You know, 8-10 year old meads. I'm bringing to the club and sharing with everybody because they all appreciate them, you know, like you and everybody, your dad, Joe, everybody.
I love it. Yeah.
Well, maybe a couple don't, but most of them do.
Yeah. So, John, then you talked about, you know, just trying to be more natural flavors, you know, more natural spice. So something like an eggnog mead does not interest you, huh?
No, I would think of that as it would cloud up the mead. And I like my meads to be clear. You know? I don't want them to be cloudy or mucky with a bunch of crap at the bottom, you know. Sometimes I do filter them out. I will pour them because most of mine are still, you know, I try to make a bubbly or, a sparkling or a Pelagian mead, and it's so dangerous to add more honey or more corn sugar or whatever, you know, table sugar, because you just don't know what these meads do. And unless you have those big, strong, you know, 16-9 German bottles, they're going to blow up if you don't add the correct amount. So I had one time where I popped the cap of a 16.9, and it shot 30 feet in the air into a tree, and I had about, you know, maybe an ounce left of it. You know, it was really under pressure. And so I had like 16 of those bottles, and I opened every one of them. Every one of them just blew like they were ready to, you know, blow up. So I've always stayed away from trying to carbonate mead in the bottle. I've always said, if I'm going to carbonate it, I'm putting it in a keg, and then I'm going to transfer back off the keg into a bottle.
And, John, now we're talking about, you know, the honey. So can you mix, like, you know, because we always see, like, 3 cheese, 4 cheese, this, 4. I mean, could you mix, like, 3-4 meads, honeys all together, or do you like to just do 1 honey per mead?
Well, I'm you know, kind of selfish when it comes to flavors and meads. You know, I don't mind throwing a clover mead or a wildflower or even a gallberry or something into the primary so that the yeast eat all that, because the yeast eat all that honey and all that flavors and all those aromas go away, you know, as it's fermenting out, you know, the airlock. And then you have to, you know, stop that fermentation or those meat. You have to stop the yeast by adding like potassium sorbate, and it doesn't really kill the yeast that's in there, but it stops them from reproducing. So when you back sweeten and you put, you know, in a 5 gallon batch, you don't want to put more than, I don't know, 2 pounds back into it to get it to you know, little flavor, because you know in the beginning you taste it, oh, this ain't enough. But once you let it sit a while, oh boy, I'm glad I didn't put too much. You know, I'm glad I didn't put more in there, because this is enough as it is. It takes it a while to kind of blend or meld together, and I think a lot of that has to do with the old yeast that are sitting there still eating some of that honey. That's, you know, that, but they're not producing any new ones, so it's very slow. You know, you have to, once you backsweet, you have to leave it on the airlock in another month or so that it still can bubble out and not build up. If you know, you don't backsweeten right away and then bottle, you know, a day later, that's pretty dangerous that way. So you want to let it sit a while before you know, you want to make sure it's finished before you bottle it, after you backsweeten it. And I like to backsweeten my meads. You know, you tasted them all. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
great, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I boil, you know, 20 European oak cubes to a 5-gallon batch. Sometimes I'll do 40, depending if I don't like how, you know, I'll taste it. It needs more, you know, tannins or more vanilla or something, you know, and I'll add more wood or oak. And I'll let that sit in there, you know, the cubes. Just pour it right in there with a tea and everything and let it sit there for 6 months if I have to, you know, or stuff like that. It's, you know, it's what I do. I think my meads are kind of unique to a lot of people's. You're not so...
Yes, that's good.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, not... I'm finding that out. You know, I didn't do that on purpose, but the way I do my meads, I think they turn out pretty well, from being 3 months old to being 12 years old. You know, sometimes I lose a little flavor, sometimes I lose a little aroma the older they get, but they're still, you know, pretty good. I mean, I'm patting myself on the back a little here, but I've won most of my medals under mead making. You know, I guess because I was cheap. You know, I don't want to buy a big expensive beer system. You know, I got a Bruzilla now, and that's, you know, that's kind of what I like, and I still transfer off of that. I don't have, you know, clothes transfer or anything. I'm you know, transferring with a siphon and stuff like that. So it's easier to make mead without all the equipment compared to making beer that's good and flavorful. You need a little bit more of that equipment to do that.
Oh, yeah, you could definitely taste the love, John. So, you know, you're talking about aging mead. It kind of reminds me of like wine. When somebody says, oh, I have a 13-year-old wine, I have an 8-year-old wine, I think it would be a good occasion. I mean, is that like if there's a special occasion or something and he says, I've got an 8-year-old mead, or I got this or I got that, it's time now? Or...
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people say, how do you not drink these meads, you know, for 8, 10, you know, some years?
Right.
And like I said, I kind of have a whole bedroom with cases of bottles and stuff like that. So I sometimes forget about them, and I just don't drink them.
Right.
You know, and I'm more of a beer guy, and if I do finish, I don't drink a lot of mead. I finish up on mead, you know, maybe 2-4 ounces if I'm... But most of the time I'm drinking, I want to drink beer, you know, but mead is more of a female kind of a marketing, you know, you want to market to the females who like the meads more than the males. You know, men are all beer drinkers, but they will drink some mead maybe after they've had a bunch of beer. But females will drink mead right away and not even care about the beer, you know. So that's how I've always looked at it, you know, that, you know.
There.
Yeah, Mike's leaving.
Yeah. So, Jen, I wanted to ask you, you know, we really appreciate the time, you know, and the aging you do with meads. But just for reference, what do you think is the quickest time? I mean, as far as, you know, aging a mead or letting a mead sit, I'll take a look at that. But, I mean, as far as, you know, how long minimum do you think mead should age?
Well... Most of mine age in my spare bedroom, which is anywhere from 68 in the winter to 78 in the summer, with varying degrees in between. I would say a mead is drinkable at 3 months.
Okay, 3 months.
You age it to 6 months, it's even better. After a year, it's really, really good. And then... the longer you age it, the more some of the tannins and the what I consider a bittering agent fall back on it, and it makes it easier and easier to drink as almost like a wine instead of a honey wine or a mead, you know, a honey beer. So that there's a point where I think after 12 years, they fall off pretty quick. So you want to drink them before 12 years. But most of the time, it's between 6 months to 2 years is when your mead should be really good to drink, and even and beyond that.
So, I mean, is there a way, like, John, like you could, you know, drink at 3 months and then seal it back up and drink at 6 months? Or once you kind of break it out, then you pretty much have to drink it? Or?
No. Again, if you have the flip-top bottles, you can put it back in there and leave a air gap, half the bottle, you know. Yeah. It might get a little oxidized, but I call that sherry-like. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times I don't mind a sherry type of beer. In fact, I want a lot of my meads to have that sherry or oxidized tinge or toward, you know, that flavor. I'll transfer without purging my CO2 I'll transfer 5 gallons to another 5 gallon carboy, and I won't purge CO2. I'll transfer right onto that atmosphere, you know, into that new carboy to get it off what I call the muck, or the stuff that builds, you know, the leads, you know, in beer terms, the trub or trube, you know, all that. I want to get it off that. And then a lot of times once I transfer at least once, I'll hit it with like super clear. Because I found over the years, I always got about an inch of muck in the bottom of my 12-ounce bottles, you know, my first years I was doing it.
Yeah.
And then once I started using the super clear and stuff, it came down to like maybe a 16th of an inch, or a dusting of the same leads or trube or what do you want to call it at the bottom of the bottle. So the more I'll put the super clear in there, and they say, oh, I'll let it go a day or two. I'll let it go 2 weeks, you know, and then transfer off that so that all those polyphenols and proteins and yeast cells or whatever's in there, you know, drop out, and it's just clear, good, you know, flavorful mead.
Okay, John, we really appreciate your time. Any final thoughts or anything else you'd like to mention here?
Oh, yeah, this is, you know, the Christmas season, and yeah. I want to mention everybody, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Holidays. It seems like there's a lot of barrel-aged stouts going around now, and I got that Dogfish Head Worldwide Utopia Barrel Stout that I want to break out, maybe, or maybe a narwhal or something like that here in this cooler, you know, Florida cooler weather, 70 degrees instead of, you know, 30 like up in Manhattan or somewhere, you know. But I'm thinking that this is the stout time of year, so we'll drink some stouts and finish them up on some nice flavorful traditional meads.
Okay, thanks so much, John. My guest has been John Sather from the Central Florida Homebrewers, who are having their general membership meeting today at Dead Lizard Brewing in Orlando, Florida. And please stay with us for our very last segment of this edition of our program today. Well, welcome back to our very last segment of this edition of the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Kara, here as the Central Florida Homebrewers are having their general membership meeting at Dead Lizard Brewing. With me today is a member of the Central Florida Homebrewers, C.J. Ahern. And C.J., it's a pleasure and honor you could join me today. I know that you brought a couple of beers, you know, to share with the club at the meeting. And why don't you tell us about them?
Okay, well, the first one I made was a Citro Pale Ale. So just a basic pale ale with some two-row, some regular malt. And then I dry hopped it with an ounce of Citra. So you get the Citra and the hop flavor, but not too intense. Came out like 5.5, easy drinking beer, enjoyable, and that's it did very well at the fest. I didn't blow the keg, so we're finishing it off today at the meeting, and everybody's enjoying.
And you were saying that you have oatmeal stout then just about ready, huh?
Yep, it's just about ready. It's on cold crash right now. That's when you put the beer in the fridge and you let it clear up a little bit, clean up. And all the crap goes to the bottom that you don't want in the beer. And then you transfer it to a keg and you carb it up and you're good to go. It's my first oatmeal stout I ever brewed.
Great. And so as you were mentioning that the club was at the Orlando you know, beer festival, and we saw you there, and was this the first time? I mean, as far as you've been in the club, and I think that I've been in the club, that the club decided to do this. The thing is, I know you were mentioning you need a lot of beer, but you had what, like 9 kegs?
Yeah, we did good. Yeah, we've done quite a few fests over the years, and this is the one where we had plenty of beer, and all the guests were loving it.
Great. So, CJ, now since the year's, you know, coming to a close, I mean, do you have any beers? I mean, are you trying to make New Year's resolutions for the new year of what beers you're going to brew, or you just kind of, you know, do it as you go along? Or
I just do it as I go along. I'm pretty much an IPA pale ale guy, so that's mainly what I make. And with my setup, the ales and the IPAs that work the best for me.
Oh.
My neighbor keeps coming over and wants some more.
Oh. So, I mean, for you, CJ, do you have a chance to drink a lot of IPAs or a lot of these beers, you know, to get ideas or to get flavors in there? Or?
Yeah, of course. I frequent quite a few breweries. My favorite brewery is Rock Pit Brewing in Orlando, Florida. And then whenever I go on vacation, I go to breweries. Like, my favorite brewery in Plymouth, Massachusetts is Mayflower Brewing. The hometown of America's brewery. It's been around a long time, and they do a good job. It's just a small hole-in-the-wall brewery in a little building, and they distribute all over New England.
So, CJ, when you go back home to Plymouth, I mean, you mentioned, that brewing, but, I mean, is there other brewing companies there, a lot of craft beer there?
Oh, yeah, there is. Quite a few. A lot of them are actually in the city of Boston. Like Trillium and Harpoon and Sam Adams, some of those you could probably guys are familiar with.
Yeah.
But it's nothing like having fresh beer when you go to the store and you look at the bottle date and this was bottled yesterday. It can't get any fresher than that. So
CJ, I don't know if we've asked you about holiday beers or any sort of we found out that eggnog beer might not be the best idea, huh?
No. Now, pretty much holiday beer, you're looking at like winter warmer, right. Stouts, yeah. And that's kind of why I did the oatmeal stout. It's going to be my winter beer.
Oh. So you mainly like to make this oatmeal stout then around winter then? Or?
Yeah, we live in Florida, so we really don't have winter, but we can still make the beer. It's all good.
So, I mean, you make certain. So, I mean, is there a summer, a spring, and a fall IPA too? Or?
There can be. You got the West Coast IPA, you got the East Coast, and then you got the Hazy. The Hazy is pretty much going to be, New England's going to be in the summer months when it's really hot. And then the East Coast and the West Coast is going to be the other times. It's not as intense.
So, I mean, is there any, you mentioned about, you know, the beers you make. I mean, is there sometimes a style you might make that you usually don't make for like a competition or?
Yeah, well, one of the styles I want to work on, it's one of my favorite beers, is a Oktoberfest lager. And as you know, we only make those between September and October, and it's finished.
So, yeah, so.
That's a seasonal beer.
Oh, so I mean, for you, CJ, do you tend to give, you mentioned your neighbor coming over, but I mean, is there a lot of interest more around the holidays, hoping that, you know, you'll fill stockings with beers or?
Oh, yeah, of course. All my friends that like beer, I even bring it into work and share it.
Yeah, that's great. But I mean, you know, when you do you ever get any suggestions? I mean, do the people ever say, oh, you should make this beer, you should make that beer?
No, not really. But everybody says I make really good beer, and I need to get my beer in the store. And I think that's really good compliment.
Oh, great. So, the new year is coming. And so, I mean, for you, CJ, do you try to make a certain amount of beer? I mean, do you try to do it where you have, you know, always have fresh, you know, beer, or you just make it when you can make it?
I make it when I can make it, but I also make it when I know I'm running low.
Oh, right.
Like, I knew that I was running low on my hazy IPA and my pale ale, so I said, oh, let's make a stout. And then after the stout's on tap, I'll go in and make two more beers. So I'm always, the beer is always flowing, you know?
Oh, so one thing, CJ, as our audience may or may not know, is that you're a chef. So, I mean, do you, you know, when you're you know, have this beard and you brew beer, do you like to pair with food? I mean, do you do your own beer food pairings?
Or? I can. Like, of course, like stouts is going to go more with like spicy food and IPAs. And then the fruity beer is going to go with like more lighter food. It just depends.
So what's a good beer, CJ, if you're just having a pizza or a burger? I mean, is there a certain beer that you... I mean, does an IPA go with that?
Or? It does, or maybe just a nice crisp red ale. Just a red, you know, or amber.
Yeah, there you go.
The bitterness is really going to balance out with this pizza, especially if you got, like, spicy sausage, pepperoni. It's gonna be good.
Great. So, CJ, yeah, we wish you the best in, getting all these, you know, ideas for beers. And, you know, I mean, have you ever thought of creating a new IPA or, I mean, something that no one's ever done before? Or?
I do. Like, I'm just making a beer out of nothing, you know? Like, you have, like, a... For example, I'm planning on making a citrus saison for a competition, but I'm going to take it to a notch. I'm going to dry hop it. Saison is not typically dry hop, but why not? Why not?
Yeah. Okay, CJ. Well, wish you a Merry Christmas, happy holidays. You have big plans for the holidays. Are you going to get back to Plymouth and all that New England beer?
Or? I actually am, but it's not for a good reason, unfortunately. So just a little memory here. My last beer is my Hazy IPA, and I was brewing it, and my mother passed away. And in memory of my mom, this beer is named Mom's Favorite IPA. And sorry to bring you all some bad news, but, you know, nobody lives forever.
We wish you the best and our deepest condolences, CJ. But again, want to wish you the best. So any final thoughts or anything else you'd like to mention here?
No, we should be good. Just enjoy your, hope everybody enjoys the holidays. Get drunk, enjoy yourself, and on to the new year.
Okay, my guest has been C.J. Ahern from the Central Florida Homebrewers as they're having their general membership meeting here at Dead Lizard Brewing. And this is the, you know, the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Cara. And please catch us again next time.
You've been listening to the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Cara, the podcast for Central Floridians who want to be in the know what's happening in Orange, Lake, Osceola, and Seminole counties. Sponsored by the Central Florida Home Brewers, the premier craft and homebrew club. Learn to brew beer, kombucha, mead, and make wine by visiting www.cfhb.org. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you back here next week.